Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He has 12 strikeouts. He has a 1-0 lead. But with runners at the corners, he has to face arguably the best hitter in the league this year. Broken back, Gordon's got it. Jose, terrific. 8 shutout innings, a dozen strikeouts, and he works out of trouble and gets his biggest outs here in the 8th.
So this is going to be a little bit of a somber episode to start with. As everybody knows, Jose Fernandez, the talented right-handed pitcher for the Miami Marlins, died tragically early in the morning on Sunday. So Armando and I are going to spend a large portion of this show just discussing him, the pitcher, what could have been, a phenomenal player. So Armando, how are you?
It's going to be tough to get through this, dude. Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking forward to talking about it because it's good to talk about the kid. And, with what we saw today between the Mets and the Marlins, that's something you don't see every day and you might not ever see again. It's just going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, watching that pregame ceremony was extremely difficult. I think I made about 12 seconds before I started crying. You could just see that there was so much love for his teammates and then the larger fraternity of just baseball players. I mean, I know that the Mets and the Marlins play each other a lot, so these guys have obviously faced Jose Fernandez quite a bit, and they know the kind of competitor and player he was. But I'd also assume that, they're coming from a spot of great respect, especially a player like Yoan Cespedes, also having come over from Cuba, granted a little bit differently when he was an older player and actually a major league ready player, unlike Fernandez. He seemed to be really, really distraught on the field. So that was, it was extremely tough to watch. But what did you make of the ceremony? And I guess also D. Gordon's opening of the game with that dramatic home run.
Well, first off, I want to tip my hat to your Mets. It was really classy on their part. I think what the Marlins are doing is phenomenal. I think the way they're really, honoring him is great. The way all the players are really uniting about it, and they all wore his number, his name today. I thought that was a phenomenal touch.
The last time anybody's ever wearing the number 16 for the Marlins is today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, without question. I don't know, dude. I don't know where to really start. I think we should probably just start with his story. I mean, tonight was crazy. It was really an outpour of emotion from everybody. You saw it on the Marlins' face. You saw it. I mean, we've heard it in interviews, Don Mattingly. We've heard it, D. Gordon. And then D. Gordon, one of his closest friends to just go deep in the opening at bat, cry the whole way around the bases. Dude, it's some shit that, I don't know, man. It's not ever going to happen again. This is the way he's being honored, the way he's being respected, the way he's being, the tribute to him. Everything is, it's a credit to the young man. It's incredibly powerful, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I just can't think of a player in my lifetime in almost any sport who had transcended this quickly. I mean, Jose Fernandez, if you look into the pitcher he is, he has the best start to his career of any pitcher before age 23 ever. Better than Pedro, better than Gooden. Better than, the only guy apparently who had just a better ERA plus than him was Herb Score, who was a Cleveland Indians pitcher from the 50s, whose prime was cut short. But Fernandez was, if you're looking at the pitchers we have now, even a guy like Kershaw when he was young, he's putting up better numbers than him. I mean, 38-17 at the age of 24. He was leading the National League in every major pitching category. I mean, I was dreading the Mets having to face him tonight in a pennant race situation. That was the way it was supposed to be. I mean, he was moved his start from yesterday to today, and that you know, the fact that he was going to probably crush the Mets, I probably would have spent 9 innings, you know, cursing his name, knowing how good he was. And instead, you know, the fact that he wasn't out there beating the Mets today is the most tragic and depressing thing I could possibly think of.
Yeah, you know, like you said, incredibly talented kid, off to a phenomenally hot start to his career. You know, for any pitcher in Major League history over 250 innings at home, he had the best ERA. So that tells you something. There's been a lot of Major League pitchers. I don't know, man. I don't know. But we should probably tell his story, give a little background. So I'll let you to it, man.
Yeah. So Jose Fernandez, born in Cuba, for a long time, you know, wanted to get to the U.S. to play. As a teenager, he tried to come 3 times. Spent a year in a Cuban prison. Finally, on the trip that he was going to make it over, he's on a raft between Cuba and Mexico, a long trip where you're trying to evade the Cuban Coast Guard who are shooting at you. Someone on his raft falls overboard. He jumps in to save the person who falls overboard without even noticing that once he got her back onto a boat, that it was his own mother. Finally gets to the United States, goes to high school in the Tampa area, pitches extremely well, pitches his high school to 2 straight Florida State championships, is taken with the 14th pick of the first round of the 2011 draft. Gets through the Marlins system by 2013, wins the 2013 Rookie of the Year, pitches to an ERA of just under 2.25 as a rookie, has an incredible year, goes down into his second season with an ulnar collateral ligament tear, you know, the dreaded injury that no pitcher wants, costs him a year with Tommy John, comes back in the middle of 2015. And the Marlins were incredibly relieved to see him not skip a beat. The rest of the National League East, incredibly, you know, at that point in time, upset to see him not skip a beat. But the reality is, you know, you always want to see pitchers who are that good because they're special. And the way in which he did it also, just a smile on his face at all times was, I mean, he celebrated the game. He was a joy to the game. It's everything about it is tough to see. But then in 2015, the Florida Marlins took advantage of the thawed relations between the United States and Cuba to get the person he called the most important person in his life from Cuba to the U.S., which is his grandmother, and surprised him with her being brought to a game where she was given a special dispensation of visa and was then, you know, lived with his family for the rest of his life. Just sad that we can now say that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the worst part also, I mean, you touched on it, dude. It's the way he did it, you know, always smiling. It was him as a person that's so hard, you know. What he did in the community, he was a big part of that Miami community, the Latin community, the Cubans community. What he did there is indescribable, to be quite honest, you know, and for me, it's really hard to see a young man with so much potential, so much enthusiasm for life and really just so much kindness go. It's just not supposed to be that way, man. And like you said, you know, he really battled to get to this country, to have an opportunity to succeed, to have the American dream. That was all he ever wanted. You know, that's all a lot of those players that come from Cuba, that come from outside, a lot of people that migrate to this country, that's what makes it so beautiful. You know, as a son of 2 immigrants that may not have come in here in the most legal of ways, this resonates with me so much. And I know I didn't come up, my parents didn't come on a boat, and then my mom didn't almost drown, and it wasn't anything as drastic as his story, but I can so relate to this, and it's so hard, you know, and seeing him leave a pregnant, you know, girlfriend of 5 months is the hardest pill to swallow, dude.
Yeah, and I mean, So in the first inning of tonight's game with the Mets, the first at bat, D. Gordon stepped in to the plate as the Marlins leadoff hitter. D. Gordon's a left-handed hitter who has no power. Jose Fernandez as a pitcher had more power than D. Gordon, but Gordon stepped in and mimicked Jose Fernandez's exact batting stance for the first pitch he took. Then he stepped back across to the left side, and D. Gordon also, who hits a home run once every 269 at-bats, absolutely unloads on a ball off Bartolo Colon, and rounding the bases, just breaks down and cries. I mean, it just says everything when the man as to how much he meant to his teammates. When you saw the reactions and the amount and the outpouring of just sorrow towards him and his passing, I don't think this is a player that baseball will soon forget, and I hope it's a player that baseball never forgets.
No, absolutely not, man. And I want to ask you, man, before we get into anything else, do you have a memory of Jose Fernandez, either on the field or off, that really stands out to you?
Yeah, earlier this season, actually, because the last time that he faced the Mets, he didn't pitch that incredibly well, but I was lucky enough to get him to see him pitch quite a bit because of the fact he pitched in our division. Earlier this season, on a Sunday afternoon, Jose Fernandez and Matt Harvey going seven innings each of them went seven innings in this game, 1-0 pitcher's duel. But Jose Fernandez gets Wilmer Flores swinging with just one of the nastiest sliders you'll ever see for his final out. And you can just see him going nuts on the mound, celebrating as if, you know, he just recorded the final out in the seventh game of the World Series. And, you know, that's how he was. That's everything he was on the mound, the pitcher. Pure, unrestrained joy. Just, you know, the only thing he wanted to do was play baseball. And he was, it's just the joy with which he did that. It's, like I said, it's just something I hope baseball never forgets.
Yeah, man. I mean, for me, he came to the Ravine, came to Chavez Ravine earlier this year. And he blanked the Dodgers. He just, he whooped us. It was firework night. So, you know, the Dodgers let the fans onto the field. They get to throw out a towel and watch the fireworks show. It's really nice. Jose Fernandez, everybody, both dugouts cleared. They went into the clubhouse, handled their business. And Jose Fernandez pulled up a chair and sat down the first baseline away from all the fans. Yeah, but he pulled up a chair and enjoyed the fireworks show. He was just a big kid, man.
Yeah, he was. I mean, there's another great one where he hit a home run against the Braves, rounding bases. He he seemed to really irritate them with a bat flip. They kind of cleared out to meet him, and the only thing that he said to him was like, "I'm not trying to show you guys up. I'm just having fun," or something along those lines. I mean, not everything had to be so serious, but
we need to have more fun, man.
We need to have more fun. All right.
This is hard.
Yeah, that wasn't fun. Let's go on to saying not goodbye, but so long to another legend of the game. And I'm calling Jose Fernandez a legend of the game.
You know, absolutely, absolutely.
He is that to me. But Vin Scully called his last home game yesterday.
God, it's been an emotional fucking 2 weeks for me, man. Vin is LA. Vin is the Dodgers. For my parents, he's the Dodgers. For me, he's the Dodgers. For 67 years, he's been the Dodgers. He's called more than 50% of all Dodger, either Brooklyn or LA games. That's insane, bro.
Yeah.
For me, it was a blessing. I couldn't tell you how much I enjoyed listening to him, whether on the radio, whether on TV, stuck in traffic. It didn't matter. Vin made it better. He painted a picture. He told you a story. He told you five stories in one sentence. He was a painter. He was a Mozart. He was everything, bro. Vin Scully, not enough words except for the greatest is appropriate. There's a reason everybody wants to say goodbye. There's a reason everybody goes up into, you know, Vin's press box and wants a picture, wants a hug, wants a conversation. He's baseball at its finest, man. He's the best announcer that we've ever seen in any sport, I dare say. And he changed how it's done. so seamless, so kind, so enjoyable, so genuine. The way he got to know the players, the way he got to know background stories, tidbits on people, the way he remembered every little thing. Vin Scully is will never, you know, like Jose Fernandez is never going to be replaced and will never be forgotten in baseball lore.
Yeah, I mean, Scully is widely known, and the, you know, especially to opposing fans too, is when your team is playing against the Dodgers, if you can get a Dodger, if you can get a Dodger call of the game, you want to watch that. Thankfully, that's possible with the MLB Network if you're not blacked out locally. But he's the best. He just everything you said about him telling a story in five sentences or five stories in a single sentence is true. And the fact that he did everything on his own, he didn't have this modern color man and play-by-play construct where he needed an analyst to basically explain every single aspect of the game. The fact that Vin Scully, you know, when you were taught, when he was introducing a baseball game to you, this is a man who had very strong beliefs about a lot of things, but you never had those thrown upon you. All he did was talk the game, right? He didn't try to pontificate to you about anything else. All he wanted to do was describe a baseball game to you. And that's exactly what he did.
And he never rooted for the Dodgers. He never said we. He never said us. He always said the Dodgers. He was never a homer.
And you know that anybody who watched a team play for that long, who left Brooklyn with them to go to L.A., obviously wanted the team to do well. If you see enough, it would be very masochistic to watch the same team for 67 years and hope that they lose.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. But, you know, the tribute the players gave him was nice. You know, every batter in his last game when they came up to the plate, you know, saluted him, tipped their cap to him. That was very nice. The way Charlie Culberson came up and we battled and we won walk-off fashion, of course, right?
Why not give him that ending?
And then he, you know, thanked the players. He had a banner made thanking them, thanking us. And that's... He never made the fan feel insignificant. He always made us feel like the most important part of the game. And not many do that. Yeah. For Vin, too, it was a lot of things. You know, it was not just what he said. It was what he didn't say. I mean, when Gibson hit his home run against Eckersley, you know, there was a minute of silence. He let us enjoy that. Everybody got to hear it and feel it. Got to, you know, taste that moment. It's what he did and didn't do. He was perfect and masterful in every stroke he took. Vin Scully was the epitome of professional, the epitome of what an announcer should be, and we're never gonna get that again. Ever, 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 ever. He is definitely a once in a lifetime, once in a generation, once in an ever type of man.
So just a quick logistical question. He is still doing the three games in San Francisco, right?
Yes. Just stopped calling the home games.
It was last game. No, because that's important, and it segues into the fact that I actually have a real interest in those games because of the fact that
you guys are facing off. Yeah,
we are. It's the Mets, it's the Cardinals, and it's the Giants. Three for two spots, all within a game of each other. The teams play right now. The Mets are, as mentioned earlier, in Florida for three against the Marlins and Miami. They've lost the first game 7-3. The Cardinals are, and then the Mets after Miami go to Philadelphia. So they're going to be in Philadelphia for the weekend, day off on Wednesday. Currently sitting a game back are the Giants. They're off tonight. So actually now it's now dropped to a half game with the Mets. So Mets half game front. And then the Cardinals were a game and a half behind the Mets coming into play tonight. The Cardinals are, I think, I'm not sure if they finally lost, but they were getting annihilated by the Reds earlier, which is not a loss that they can afford, but they had four against the Reds and then three against Pittsburgh at home. So seeing the teams that those are playing, and the Giants have, I believe, Colorado at home and the Dodgers at home. The only team that really has any sort of true, the Mets have the easiest of the three, be it that Miami's been in a little bit of a tailspin lately, but you don't know what's exactly going to happen there now.
Right.
And then Philadelphia, who the Mets played two out of three of against this weekend, and actually, you know, outscored the Jets pretty handily.
I knew you'd get that in there.
A 17-0 win against the Philadelphia Phillies on Sunday. You know, at least some team in New York scored 17 points. But yeah, those matchups are it's tough to tell who has it easiest versus who doesn't, because there's the Giants obviously have the toughest team to play left than the Dodgers, but the Dodgers at this point are basically just going to be getting their starters out there and in rhythm and in a rotation for the division series starting next week.
By the right.
way, congrats on clinching.
Thank you. But it is the Giants.
But
so
it is the Giants. So
it will be a strong lineups, and we will be going out there to win those ball games.
Yeah, so a quick one before we get into the permutations that this could take. What do you do? Do you just make sure that the lineup stays sharp, but you don't put anybody in a spot where they take too many bats or can get hurt?
I think the guys are going to want to play. I think they're going to want to keep it rolling. Adrian Gonzalez is a horse. He'll play. We constantly rotate our outfield, so that won't change. We're just going to be rotating. I could see us possibly resting Seager a game or two, because that kid is just Jesus. I love that boy.
That you should.
And aside from Seager getting rest, I could see the rotation. Maybe Clayton getting pushed back for the LDS and a couple other things like that for sure. I could probably see some call ups, maybe just for some pitchers. I could probably see that. But other than that, man, I expect us to go out there and win those games. I expect us to go out there hard. I expect Dave Roberts to do the job. He's very professional. He has his team prepared. It's the Giants, man. We don't ever want to lose to the Giants. I don't care what the situation is. We could have won this division by 15 games, and we're going to go out there and try to sweep that.
Oh, I mean, trust me, I absolutely hope you do, because to be perfectly honest, as a Mets fan, assuming that the Mets can, basically, if you actually look at these teams' weeks, in reality, none of them can afford to go 2-4. Roughly 3-3 or 4-2. If each of those teams does that, then it gets you into the wacky scenario of all these different tiebreakers. I have read up on every possible tiebreaker, and I cannot for the life of me explain exactly how it works.
Good, because you were going to give me a headache trying. I know you were.
Yeah, I just know that the Mets have a tiebreaker over San Francisco, because the Mets and the Giants played a 7-game season series, and the Mets won that season series. But they played a 6-game season series against St. Louis, and that was split 3-3. So the tie. So I'm not going to even try to go further because I can't give you that headache.
That's fine. I mean, based on what I'm seeing and the teams, I really do expect it to be the Cards. To be quite honest, you and the Cards, the Mets and the Cards.
The Giants. The Giants' tailspin needs to be completed, right?
I would say so. I mean, it's only appropriate. As bad as they've been in the second half of the season, they deserve nothing near, a playoff position. Because even though they were probably the best team in baseball, or hands down the best team in baseball in the first half, this has been the most catastrophic, downspin or downfall I've ever seen of a baseball team. And I'm so happy that it's them.
I understand that from your point of view. Dropping two to the Padres this weekend is certainly not the type of confidence boost you want going into this.
Right. Exactly. That's never good. And the way they lost them has been the story of probably the second half of this season. They just can't keep a lead, man.
So I think we actually both kind of agree that that's going to happen, just because I could still see that. I just see that the Giants have the toughest road left. Pittsburgh could still put a spanner in the works for the Cardinals, and the Mets are actually just they're a mash unit. Their pitching has fallen apart. Bartolo Colon getting hit hard today. Syndergaard getting scratched with strep throat. DeGrom out for the season. Matt's suffering a setback. Robert Gesselman and Seth Lugo have done a great job steadying on the fort. But at this point, the Mets only have 4 starters. Which is amazing, considering the depth of starting pitching they started the season with.
Right. I mean, the Mets, that's what everybody was ranting and raving about, right? It was the depth in that pitching rotation, 6 deep, this, that, and the third. And now we're seeing that no matter how much pitching you have, man, it's never enough.
By the way, just one aside. If the Mets make the playoffs with the fall, with having lost Matt Harvey, David Wright, Lucas Duda, Jacob DeGrom, Steven Matz, Neil Walker, Zach Wheeler all for the season, and then Lucas Duda for 4 months of it, and Travis d'Arnaud for about half of it as well. I don't know that even if they lose in the first round of the playoffs, I can't possibly just be disappointed with that because most other teams would fall apart and quit. So I am, regardless of what happens, pretty proud of the effort that team's performed this year.
No, they've been scrappy and a lot like the Dodgers. They've been incredibly scrappy and gritty, and it's been nice to see those teams really claw their way into positions where, you know, with the hands dealt, they probably shouldn't be in. But the grittiness, the professionalism, and really, I think it's just the team spirit in those clubhouses that really gets them, you know, motivated to win these games. And really, it's just clutch timing. I think for the Mets, it's really important to get home field, though. You want to be at City, you want to have that crowd rocking, especially. I mean, I guess that's it for anybody in this wild card playoff game, right? I mean, play to get in, and you really want to be home, but you don't want to go to St. Louis, and you don't want to go to San Francisco. Those are two really tough places to play. You don't want the crowd against you. And if you can go into City Field.
You can still call Shea.
Okay. Into Shea/City Field. You guys, I think, have a big leg up, and because I think you guys at home, I'm not too sure what the record states, but when I watch when the crowd is into it, you guys are a force at home, and we saw that during the playoffs and during the run into the playoffs last season.
Oh yeah, no, they that's actually 100% correct. They are a much better home team than a road team right now. And to be perfectly honest, you are going to be running into a buzzsaw in the first round of the playoffs because you are going to be running into the Cubs, which. For whichever team wins that wild card, you know, stakes are high, and that's going to be tough. I actually think that the team that might be actually best positioned to dethrone them, though, is the Giants.
And why so? Why do you think that?
It's all health dependent on Johnny Cueto.
Okay.
But I think that considering right now that the Cardinals pitching is, you know, Carlos Martinez and, you know, a prayer. The Mets
and four others.
Yeah. It'll be three other guys because it's a 5-game series, but right. Nonetheless. And then the Mets pitching is Syndergaard, Cologne, and then two guys who, you know, and I can never give enough credit to Mets pitching coach Dan Worthen because he's great. I mean, it seems like every single starting pitcher that the Mets bring up like learns this devastating slider and just becomes unreal because Lugo and Gesselman have been great at the back end of the rotation right now. They're legitimately two guys who are holding the Mets into this race, but I still think that Bumgarner and Cueto, you can get those two to pitch, especially considering the fact that Bumgarner seems to be made of steel and iron. You can get those guys to pitch, four out of your five games. You just need to cobble together one more start.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And that makes perfect sense. I mean, really the Cubs, they, by far, have been the best team in baseball. They've been very thorough in their dominating of the National League Central, which has been a tough division over the last few seasons. And I mean, Pittsburgh's still a tough team. The Cardinals are a tough team. I think they're going to be a handful for anybody. But like you said, I think the Giants and the Mets. I do like the Mets still. I do. It's the grittiness. You guys are fighters, man, and you can never. You can't count that out. I can't say the same about the Giants. Even if the Giants get in, you could line up whatever pitchers you want, but they're not gonna. You know, you're hoping on 9 innings from the. You're hoping for a complete game because that bullpen is trash.
Oh, the bullpen's trash. And another thing that you and I haven't spoken enough about this season is what the hell happened to Buster Posey.
I mean, it's good, right?
I like when the game superstars produce.
No, look, me as a Dodger fan, I revere Buster Posey. I respect him tremendously. Actually, all banter aside, I really do like him, and I just think that a lot falls on him. He has the staff, and to be honest, I just don't think he's healthy, man. Something is not right with Buster Posey, and. And that team is going to go as Buster Posey goes. Buster Posey, Madison Bumgarner, and if you don't have a bullpen, you're trash. That's been proven in baseball. You need a bullpen. We've seen that over the last few years, especially that bullpen gets you deep into the playoffs and potentially wins you rings. So,
the Royals a ring last year.
That's what I'm saying. So, for me, I don't know. I think he has to not be healthy or not at 100%. I can... You know, they're humans, obviously, so I don't know what's going on in his personal life. I don't know anything else. But from what I can see, he's not he's not getting his hands through. I feel like something's wrong with his swing. It's not as fluid as I've seen in the last couple seasons. He's not catching up on the fastball as well as we've seen. I just don't think he's healthy, man, to be quite honest.
I mean, he went 184 at bats without homering. That's for a player like him, that's actually just unacceptable.
Right. Especially when, you know, that team relies so much on you. You know what I mean? Like you said, for a player like him of that stature, of that standing in that lineup, you know, that's going to be tough sledding.
Yeah, because they've done a nice job of actually putting good complementary players around him. Like, you know, Angel Pagan is a decent player. Brandon Crawford is, you know, he's been hurt and banged up, but he's a very good player. Definitely Crawford not having the pop he had last year. This entire team doesn't have the pop it had last year. But Crawford not having the pop he had last year, Hunter Pence being in and out of the lineup, they've had a bad run of luck with injuries, and they've also had a bad run of luck with just not playing well.
And then another question, actually, you brought up Hunter Pence. What happened to his defense?
You know what? I think age. I think he is. If you look at the way he's played the game his entire career,
yeah, hard nose,
yeah,
for sure. So, too hard, probably.
Probably, yeah. He's just put his body through hell.
Yeah, I could see that. But because this season, I've been so surprised with how poor he's been in the field.
I think he actually just spent way too much time with Shane Victorino and took on every single one of Shane Victorino's characteristics.
That's never good.
No, it's not. But we're gonna switch gears now over to the junior circuit, the American League. There you have not quite as tight a race because of the fact that there are two clear favorites, which are going to be Toronto and Baltimore. Toronto has a 3-game lead over third place Detroit. So effectively, if Toronto wins two games, they'll probably clinch. They'll probably have home field in the wild card game. And then Baltimore is a game and a half up over Detroit, 2.5 up over Seattle, and I think 2.5 up over Houston. So the real question is, does anybody have a chance of catching Toronto, which would only be Baltimore, would be a home field advantage situation. And then can Detroit catch Baltimore and are Houston and Seattle, you know, in the dust in this race?
Dead. They are dead. Houston and Seattle, especially Seattle, I'm really proud of the way they played this season. I didn't expect much from them, and they really came out and performed way better than I expected. I think Houston was a little bit of a disappointment for me. They started off so slowly, and if they could have had any kind of lukewarm start, they would have, you know, been in much better position. So it was a little disappointing to see how Houston came out of the gates. To answer your question, as far as Toronto being caught, I don't think so. I think Toronto, like you said, just a couple of wins will get them the division, we'll get them the wild card, and they're a really good, you know, baseball team. I like, you know, them in Baltimore are very, they're like splitting images, you know what I mean? They hit the ball deep, and that's basically how they win their games.
I do like Toronto's pitching a lot more than I like Baltimore's.
I'm going to catch them for the first spot. I think they'll have the first, the home field, but I think Baltimore is also going to get there. And I think Baltimore, home field or not, I like Baltimore better. I just don't think they have enough time to catch them for home field.
Yeah, I think I agree. Detroit just hasn't had the consistency in starting pitching all season to really do much, and that's even with Justin Verlander being resurgent. They've had some bad luck in the injury department with Jordan Zimmermann. They gave him big money at the offseason, and for most of the season, he really looked like he earned it. Hit a little bit of a wobble, and then also had, you know, some minor nagging injury issues, but the rest of the rotation, I mean, Anibal Sanchez was making significant starts for them, and that's probably not what you want at this point in the season, especially considering the fact that Anibal Sanchez has been a below major league caliber starter for probably the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, he's been pretty bad. I just don't think Detroit, if they make it, which I highly doubt they will, I don't want to see them in the playoffs. Just not going to go deep into that playoffs. You know, they don't have a team deep enough. They don't have a rotation deep enough, like you said. I think Baltimore is an exciting baseball team, and if you can hit and you can stay hot, I know pitching wins you championships and whatnot, but it'll be exciting and it can get you a good little run. And to be honest, I like the rivalry between Baltimore and Toronto. I think that game is going to be buzzing. I think that game is going to be very exciting. Probably, I hate to say it, I know that you have, you know, a horse in the race in the National League, but I think the play-in game in the American League is going to be more exciting.
I think so, too, just because I think both those teams are better. The American League East has been the best division in baseball this season. I mean, the fourth-place team is still going to finish over 500, which is the Yanks. But effectively, you're looking at a Red Sox team that's going to be thereabout. I mean, realistically, this Toronto or Baltimore team that's going to get through to the wild card presumptively is going to have to play against either Texas or Boston. And I think Boston's a more intriguing series there just because of the fact that it's, you know, you have a division rivalry.
Right, exactly. It's going to add a little oomph to that matchup.
Yeah. Do you know what's kind of amazing? Though, I have the standings in front of me. This is a total aside. I don't know how much you buy into or not. As a run difference is the indicator of a team's strength overall. The Texas Rangers are 92-65. Their run difference is +6.
That is hysterical. Actually, you'd expect that to be a much larger number.
Yeah, so if you look at the other teams that are leading their divisions, the Red Sox are +192.
You said +6.
Yeah. Cleveland is +107. I mean, if you even look in their look at the Rangers division, Seattle +53, the Astros +38, the Rangers are +6. Their record in one run games must be absurd. The Nats are +149 in the NL East. The Cubs are +250 in the Central.
That's ridiculous.
The Cubs are 156 right now. That's, if they don't win the World Series, then if you're a Chicago Cubs fan, like, find a new
sport. You're never going to do it.
The Dodgers are +104. +6.
Wow, dude, that's so – I'm shocked, actually. I don't really know how to respond to that. I mean, obviously their pitching is trash.
Yeah.
Right, because they score enough runs to win. It's the Texas Rangers. That's their bread and butter scoring run.
743 against 737.
God, seven. That is so bad.
Yeah, I don't even know how that's possible.
I don't know, man. That is a shocking stat. But if you're a Rangers fan, I'd be worried for the postseason then.
Yeah, I would too. It's just right now that the Rangers also do kind of come across like last year's Royals, only instead of beating you with singles, they bludgeon you to death with home runs, just seemingly always when they're behind.
Yeah, but we've seen this from the Rangers before. We've seen this. We've seen them capitulate in Toronto. We've seen them fall apart in the postseason. So it's hard for me to have much confidence in the Rangers, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it's very hard for me too, also just because of the fact that Arlington is the second most hitter-friendly park in the majors, I think. Outside Colorado, it has to be, right?
I don't know, man. Great American Small Park is pretty small.
Yeah, that is a small.
It's a bandbox.
Yeah, Jay Bruce has hit a lot of home runs there.
Yeah, they suckered you there.
Should have known. I knew better. I wouldn't have made that trade.
You're right. I remember you were so mad, and you're still mad.
I'm still mad. He's not very good. He misplayed. If you misplay a ball into Justin Bour, hitting a triple against you. If anybody doesn't know, Justin Bour is a first baseman for the Florida Marlins and Miami Marlins, Florida Marlins, whatever you want to call them, and he does not run well. That is me putting it very nicely. He does not run well.
You are so polite. Yeah. So polite.
So another thing I want to ask you about the American League, the Cleveland Indians today, Corey Kluber goes down with a groin injury. You've already got Carlos Carrasco on the DL and Danny Salazar. Are they toast? That's your 1, 2, and 3 starters, and they're all very good pitchers, actually.
Yeah, I would say so. Like you said, Salazar coming back is big. So, you know, Cleveland, that rotation can get them very deep into these playoffs. I think last year, you and me both were very disappointed with Cleveland. We thought they were going to do better, and we probably they probably should have done better. So I'm all in on Cleveland. I don't think it's hard for me to say they'll make the series, but if I had to pick a horse in the American League race, that pitching staff is probably the best one.
Yeah. Assuming they're all healthy, that's the way I'd want to go. as of this exact moment, before we see any of the matchups, and we're going to preview the matchups in the, at least the division series next week. As of this exact moment, you asked me a gut check. I'm going with the hottest team, which is Boston.
Yeah, I mean, Boston, they've been a team that you expect them to just cool off, and they just don't go away, man. They just don't go away.
They can bludgeon you. They score a lot of runs.
For a team that still pitches Clay Buchholz to be that good, it says everything about their offensive ability.
I'm just telling you, he's going to hit his potential at some point in his career.
Yeah, his potential at the age of 47.
I mean, there's a guy who I just don't know how you could tolerate living with him as a starter.
It's a farce, my man.
Yeah, he's 32 and he's still not giving you 200 innings in a full season.
Yeah, exactly, man. Well, I think we covered the wild card races. I think we should touch on, I think we did awards last week and we screwed up and didn't do rookies.
Yes.
Because you didn't prepare for managers and that just threw me off.
I know. That's
So give me your rookies of the years, man. We'll go with okay, first off, I want to ask you a serious question. Gary Sanchez, should he be in consideration, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to say no.
You know why? Because the whole thing is, like, if you look at a lot of these awards in baseball, they tend to be pretty stat driven.
Yeah. But the biggest stat for me is a third of the games played.
I know. It's a tough one. It's just, I look at the stats in these games that he did play, and they're just so far ahead of everybody else who qualifies as a rookie.
And he's not even showing signs of slowing down, is what's insane, right? I get it. I get the buzz. I get everything about him. He's phenomenal. I think if he could keep this up, he's the greatest baseball player of all time. We've mentioned this a few times now. I just think that Gary Sanchez he hasn't played enough. But ultimately, his eligibility for next year is already out, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's once you get to 130 at bats, you're no longer considered a rookie. But I mean, look at who else you have is basically in the AL. It's not very deep as far as who'd be your American League Rookie of the Year. Right. The only other person I could really point at, Michael Fulmer.
Yeah, that's who I was going to say. I get it. That's what makes the Gary Sanchez argument even that much more compelling, is that there's no clear cut favorite here. Right. And the excitement that he brings to the game and actually to just the casual baseball fan has been immense. So, yeah, what he's doing for the game and is great and everything. I just feel like I'd like to see a larger sample size, even though we haven't seen him struggle. You know what I mean? Every player has a struggle, and every rookie, you see them struggle, except Corey Seager, obviously. And this guy just he hasn't yet. He hasn't sputtered, and I would like to see how he handles that. I know his numbers are phenomenal. You can't argue against them. I just would like to see more games. I think 53 to 60 games isn't enough for me.
Okay, so if that's not enough for you, you think Fulmer is the guy?
Well, I'd give it to Fulmer. Yeah, that's who I'd give it to. Because there's no clear favorites, and he's probably been, he's been very good, and he's been a key piece to why the Tigers are even relevant. So, yeah, I'd give it to Fulmer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand that. I personally would choose Sanchez just because of the fact that if I look at Fulmer, the numbers are very good on Fulmer, but if you start to look at the peripherals, they're not dominant. They are just very good, which shouldn't be a knock on a rookie pitcher, and certainly one of the rare instances of a regionally mutual beneficial trade is the one that landed Michael Fulmer in Detroit. He is the player who went over from the Mets in the Yoan Cespedes trade.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Which leads me to believe that if you're going to make a trade with a team for a pitcher, trade with the Mets for minor league pitcher.
No, I would absolutely do that. Their scouting network is off the charts, and they clearly know what they're doing.
Yeah, with pitchers. Position players can't develop. Pitchers can. But I would say him, because the only other guy that comes to mind besides Sanchez and Fulmer is Tyler Naquin. And once you start going down the line with Tyler Naquin, you can start looking at the whole at-bats question with Sanchez.
Yeah.
Sanchez did more and fewer at-bats than Naquin.
Right, exactly. No, I agree with that. So, yeah, I guess it would be Fulmer, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Gary Sanchez, bro. I wouldn't.
He carried the Yankees into the playoff race, granted late, and they were very far behind. But because of him, they're not going to see that consecutive. They might not see that consecutive seasons with a winning record disappear.
Snap. Yeah. That's big. That's big for the Yankees.
It's going on 20 something years.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that hurts your soul to say, but I know. But National League, I mean, I can let you talk about him.
It's easily Corey Seager. Easily. If you think otherwise, you're not understanding the concept of value of a player to his team.
He's all Dodger rookie records with doubles already, extra base hits. He's 22 homers. Corey Seager is phenomenal. His clutch gene is great. He looks like he's been in the majors for 15 years, bro.
Yeah. I mean, he has a perfect feel for everything. He had a slight moment with him which he cooled down, but he recovered from it. Teams were pitching him very tough at the beginning of the season based off of what he did last season, and he adjusted to it. Like, his start to the season was a little rough.
Yeah. But I think he had a lot of expectations. You know what I mean? He had a good end to the last season, little playoff run and stuff. And we saw glimpses of the player he was. But I think coming in full season, I mean, we plugged him in, you know, into the heart of the lineup early on. And then he struggled a little bit. But I think what Dave Roberts has done with him and the majority of our young players has been phenomenal. So he's just taken his time with him and put his arm around him and gave him confidence. And Corey Seager is just running with it. Corey Seager hopefully can be the face of this franchise for a long, 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 long time, positionally wise.
Yeah. And on a similar token, there were some other, you know, there are some other honorable mentions at this point we should probably give. Trevor Story being that honorable mention.
Yes, absolutely. If he wouldn't have gotten injured, he would be in this conversation still, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was hitting for incredible power. He is the exact opposite of Seager, where he had a scorching start but couldn't keep it up. But nonetheless, it was an absolute scorch. I mean, you're not going to see a guy who had a better first 2 weeks in the majors than Trevor Story in a while, except for the fact that in the middle of me saying that, I also just remembered Gary Sanchez.
Oh, there you go. Myth busted already.
Yeah, exactly. Myth busted. Yeah,
see? There you go. Yeah, but I mean, aside from that, Diaz from the Cardinals, I thought, had a good Almeida's start.
Yeah, so had a great season.
But I mean, I don't, you know, so there's some players out here. Kenta Maeda for the Dodgers was really good.
Steven Matz was great until he went down.
There you go. I think that those guys that could be considered as well, but it just is no competition in the National League. It's Seager. Seager is in the MVP conversation, for God's sake. So
exactly.
You know, we might see him. Chris Bryant's going to probably take the award. Rightfully so. I mean, Chris Bryant, best player. I mean, you know, most dominant offensive player for the best team in baseball. It makes sense, right? And then just he's so much fun to watch as well. But Corey Seager, hands down, rookie of the year, the best young positional player the Dodgers have had in a long time, especially, you know, in that shortstop position. We've been needing somebody to fill that gap for a long time, and we got ourselves a good one.
Yeah. So I think that brings us to the end of this week's seventh inning stretch. From Armando and I, I just want to say thanks for listening. This will be this is being recorded on Monday night. So if you're listening to this on All In Sports, this is recorded yesterday. And if you're listening to this on Anfield Index, this was recorded on Monday night. And I think just, you know, from Armando and myself, we just want to say rest in peace, Jose.
Descanse en paz, Josecito. Thanks, guys. Bye.
0-1 to Charlie. Swung on a high fly ball to deep left field to Dodger bench empties. Would you believe a home run? And the Dodgers have clinched the division and will celebrate on schedule. The Dodgers, Charlie Culberson, a game-winning home run. What a moment to have it. And would you believe, his first home run of the year. Dodgers did what they hoped to do. It was a struggle, but they won it on their own merit, 4-3. The last home run that Charlie Culberson hit would be 2 years ago in 2014 against Cincinnati. So the Dodgers, for the fourth straight year, have won the National League division title in the West. And what a guy to do it, Charlie Culberson, after dramatic triple and a home run by Seager to keep them alive. So now they don't care about the Padres and the Giants. Care not at all. And boy, did it work out perfectly for the final home game of the regular season. They have a lot of work to do for sure. Still ahead of them.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.